Y'all are rambunctious. I like it. All right, I'm going to use my phone. I know I was told to turn it off, but I got a little outline here that I use. So I'm going to get down to business here. Where is it? Sorry, I should have pulled it up before I got here. I'll start with I am Bosco, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Bosco.
And I have been sober a lot less than Chris thinks I have. I've been sober for 4 years as of the 23rd of this month. And that's an amazing thing.
Yes.
There we are. All right. There we go. All right. I'm a native Texan, born and raised here. I'm seventh generation. Yeah, that's a strange thing. I grew up in deep East Texas where people still marry their cousins and they're still proud of it. And I got out of there as quick as I could, and I don't go back. I was raised in an alcoholic home. My parents drank like crazy. My stepdad was a lunatic alcoholic. And it was both interesting and terrifying, right? Because when he was good, it was really good. And when he was not, you need to get the fuck out of the way. That kind of situation. Can I cuss? Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Sorry. I figured, but I thought I'd honor whatever happens here. I happen to cuss a lot. Hey, doll. I always start my story with these three things. I think it's really important to tell the truth about yourself when you get up here and you do this. And I think it's good to give people things to identify with so that if they're out there and their story has some of your similarities, they can match up. And that's the first way you can be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever program you're going to, is to let people know who you really are, because somebody out there needs to know. And so the three things I start with are, first and foremost, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in any kind of higher power whatsoever. And that's so that you know you can do this no matter what. It works for anybody. The second is I'm a sexual trauma survivor. And I like to let people know, because that's a special needs kind of situation. And a lot of us don't believe that we can get it, and you can. And the third is that I suffer from what we euphemistically call outside issues. That means I take medication because I'm crazy with a diagnosis and the whole bit, like real crazy. And I like for people to know that that is not an impediment, whatever, to getting here. You can get here no matter what. I believe that you can get here no matter what, no matter who you are, no matter what has happened, if you just do the work. And my faith is in the process. I grew up in a drinking house, and I knew from the very get-go what alcoholism was, and didn't have any doubts about who I was when I started drinking. I drank alcoholically from the very first drink, and I did it to escape enormous pain and the terrors of my home life. And that worked really good, and I was willing to drink myself to death, and I knew from watching my family that that might be a possibility, you know. That this might go to a logical conclusion. And I was willing to do that as long as it would keep the pain and the suffering at bay. I was willing to make a deal with the devil, so to speak. I grew up in this little tiny redneck town, and I was a punk rock kid in 1978 when there were like 40 punk rockers in New York and 50 in Los Angeles and maybe 12 in Austin. And you, that meant when you left the house, you're getting your ass kicked pretty good every day. And a lot of that kind of stuff happened. So on the outside and the inside of my house was like a fucking war zone all the time. It was an interesting way to grow up. Let's see. So I started drinking at about 11. And I drank until I was 25 years old. I took my last drink on my first go-round on December, 18th of 1990. And I stayed sober for like 20, 21 years, something like that. I went back out, and I honestly don't remember when or how. I just sort of went back, and remarkably, it didn't work out. I'm going to try to get a little more cohesive here. My story also includes a shit ton of drugs. I love drugs, man. Like, if you want to tamp some shit down, heroin is an amazing tool for that, right? It will keep your shit at bay for a while, till it doesn't. And for me, that's the story, right? It's like, it's just this process of taking drugs and avoiding this shit that's terrifying me and making me feel terrible, and keeping that going as long as possible. And I traveled all over the world. I worked in the music business for a long time. I moved up to Seattle, Washington in 1989 to do two things. One, to work at a record label, and two, to avoid my growing methamphetamine addiction. And I got up there and I moved into a house with three heroin junkies. Guess what happened? It went well. And so I started shooting heroin. And that was the beginning of the end for me. And I could tell you all the horror stories and all the stuff. You all know that stuff. You don't need to hear it. I used drugs for as long as it worked. I drank for as long as it worked. And when it didn't work, I had to figure out something else to do, right? Because the amazing thing that happens when you put drugs and alcohol in your body, you're not in charge of what happens afterwards, right? So you might think you're going to, I'll ride this to the end and I'll die and it'll be a beautiful corpse and it'll be romantic and tragic. And then you don't, right? Then you're just stuck with you being miserable for a really long, long time, like a long time, right? And you're like, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to keep doing this. And it doesn't work. And you're like, where do I go? And I happened to know about Alcoholics Anonymous because when I was in the eighth grade, my English teacher took me to a meeting because she was concerned about how much I drank at school. And I went to the meeting, and it was my English teacher, me, and the school janitor. You are not my people. So I hightailed it out of there and kept going for a while. And so in 90, I was in Costa Rica. I was hanging out on the beach, drinking a bunch of rum, and not being able to be high and not being able to not feel miserable. And this guy I was traveling with said, you should go home. And I was like, why? We're having so much fun. And I was turning yellow because my liver had stopped working right. And shit was oozing out of my skin. And I probably looked really terrible, though I don't remember a whole lot of that. And for the first time in my life, when somebody said fire, I didn't run into the burning building, right? That's my modus operandi. I like to run into the tragedy. Yeah. Is there something really terrible about to happen? Let me make it happen on me, right? And so I came back to Austin, Texas, where I had been living since I fled from Seattle and heroin, and walked into a meeting at the Bolden Group on Bolden Avenue, the pink house. I don't know if anybody is familiar with that spot. Yeah, and I picked up a chip, and I didn't drink again for 20, 21 years. And at first, I did all the right stuff. I did all the stuff they tell you to do. I got a sponsor. I did the steps. I did all the work, right? And I did it pretty quickly, too, because I needed to get through. And also because I didn't know you couldn't not do it. Like, I thought, I married a drug and alcohol counselor. I should mention that. When I was 4 months sober, I got married to a drug and alcohol counselor. And I don't recommend that course of action, but it's what I did. And I didn't know you could say no, so I just did whatever my sponsor told me to do. And fortunately, he was a smart guy, and it worked out pretty well for me. And I got immediately involved in service work and kept commitments. And I didn't get any sponsees for a long time because nobody wanted what I had. I don't think I wanted what I had. But I kept going, man. And I just, you know, I cleaned ashtrays at Bolden. I picked up coffee cups and all that kind of stuff they tell you you can do. And then about 10 years in, I got divorced, walked away from my wife and my kids, and started being on my own for the first time ever in sobriety, like having to be a grown-up in an alcoholic mind. And that was not very easy. And that was probably the beginning of the downhill slide, honestly. And I began to misbehave in other ways, you know, with my relationships with women and with my money and with all kinds of stuff. And I started having secrets, and I liked it, right? Like, it was fun. Like, I knew some shit and you didn't know it, and I was cool, right? Because being cool is really fucking important, right? And I did that for a while, and my behavior got more and more out of control, and things spiraled, and they spiraled, and they spiraled. And finally, one day, the drink just looked better, and I just took it. And I was out for about 4 years. And I will tell you that it takes an enormous amount of drugs and alcohol to drink this shit down once you've done it. It's hard. And it doesn't work very good. AA does ruin your drinking, as they say. It's very, very true. And so I was out, and for a little while, I thought it was going really well, and everybody around me was like, this isn't going so good for you. And I was like, no, I got this. I'm good. And then about 4 years in, I woke up in my car, having had a fight with the married woman I was dating and her husband, who beat me up. And I couldn't remember how I got home. I was in my car and I was scrolling through text messages that said, you should kill yourself. You're a terrible human being. And I went, I can't do this anymore, right? That was the end for me. I knew it had been bad for a long time, but I just couldn't, like, let go. I needed to stay out there because I was sure it was going to work. Just do it right. It'll work, right? And it didn't work, and I couldn't die. I just kept going on being miserable forever and ever and ever. You know, that thing about jails, institutions, and death, that sounds real pretty and romantic to me, right? But that whole, like, you're going to be alone for 40 years in your room hating yourself, that's terrifying. And that's where I was, basically. And I was headed towards a whole lot of that for a real long time. And so I walked back into a meeting and picked up a chip and sobbed like a baby and felt ashamed and felt terrible and felt like a failure. All the stuff you feel. But I didn't have any other option, right? I was out of options. And I will say that's how I look at this thing now. I don't know about all this fancy language in those first three steps. I break it down like this. Step one, I am fucked. Step two, I believe you have become unfucked. Step three, if I do this, maybe I can become unfucked. Right? And I want to be unfucked today. I'll tell you that right now. Because I don't want to ever go back to what that was, and I'm not sure that I could survive it if I did. I got real, real crazy. That was one of the other things that I stopped doing. I stopped taking my medication, which helped facilitate the walk out the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I'm no longer in charge of my medication. I leave that to a medical professional. I think that's a real good idea. And my mental health has improved dramatically because of that. You know, I don't lay on the floor and cry for 15 hours a day anymore. So I did the deal. I came back, and I got my first return to drink to sobriety four-step done in the first 2 weeks, right? I was done, and all of it was like sex and relationships, basically, because that's what it was. terrible relationships and terrible behavior. And I would have done it quicker, but my sponsor was out of town at a funeral for his mom, and I was pissed. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? I need to get this shit done, right? Like, that's how selfish I am. Like, I don't care about your mom. I need to do some work. And but he came back. He was my sponsor before I went out. He's my sponsor now. He's going to stand up with me at my wedding in 2 weeks. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. We did that work, and we continue to do it regularly. I meet with him at least 2 or 3 times a month. We go, and we call it going for a walk. Can I take a walk around where he works? We used to work together. And we walk around for about 30, 45 minutes and talk about my dumb shit. And then he tells me why I'm fucking wrong. And it works really well because he's usually right. And so I want to talk about the differences in this go-round and the first go-round, because there are some tremendous differences, and this sobriety is dramatically different than the sobriety I had before. And I will say right now in front of all of you, I have no regrets about anything that happened. It needed to happen that way, and it transformed who I am today, right, like in a super important way. And I had been into meditation for a while before I went out. I abandoned that as well. That didn't work out so good either. And when I got back, I knew that I needed to get back into that immediately. And I practice Buddhist meditation, like specifically, not like transcendental meditation. And in Buddhist meditation, you sit on a chair or a cushion and you stare at a wall and you count your breath from 1 to 10. It is fucking boring. It's really boring. But it's also magical. It transforms your brain. And I don't know why or how or what it does, but it changes the way that I show up in the world, right? And that's the important part of this equation for me, is I needed to change how I showed up in the world. And a remarkable thing happens when you do that. The world shows up differently for you, which is amazing. Like, I show up in the world, and everybody else is not the asshole now, right? That's amazing. Like, I don't hate everybody I come encounter with. Like, you didn't move at the red light at the right speed. Fuck you. Go die. That doesn't happen anymore, right? I behave like a rational human being at least 70% of the time. And I like that, you know, because I get to do all kinds of things that I couldn't do before, right? I had a really, like, exciting life before. Like, I worked in the music business, and I was successful, and I made a lot of money, and I have gold and platinum records on my wall at home. And it was very exciting, and I nearly excited myself to death. And now I have a much quieter life, but I have a much happier life. I have a fulfilling life, right? I have the life I didn't know I wanted. And that's an amazing thing. I've had to learn to live with some terrible shit. I do terrible shit when I drink. I hurt other people on purpose because I like it. Right? Like, not because there's some real reason. I just hurt people because it makes me feel better than them. I'm an asshole, you know, like to the core. The selfish me is an unpleasant human being. I don't want to ever meet that guy again, right? Like, he doesn't live with me anymore. And that's really, really cool. Like, he's gone. And but I did a lot of that stuff with a bunch of my relationships. I broke them where they can't be fixed. Like, my children don't really speak to me anymore, right? I had to let that go. And I'm ashamed of that, right? Because it's a terrible thing to admit to other human beings that I hurt other people to the point that they no longer want to have anything to do with me. And I did it on purpose. And that's who I am when I drink and I do drugs, right? And I don't ever want to have to go through that again. And that's part of that amends process they call the living amends. That shit sucks. It's terrible. And almost all of my amends this go around were living amends. My sponsor was like, you don't need to talk to that person ever again. You need to stay the fuck away from them and behave yourself like a grown-up adult human being, right? And I didn't get to go back and make it right. I just have to live with it the way it is and make it right from now on. And that's been a difficult proposition, really. On the other hand, it is a really good motivator to not do that stuff anymore, right? I don't ever have to do that again. And so far, I haven't had to. And other than some minor, like, you know, snapping at people or being minorly unpleasant, I have not had to make a major amends this go round, not one time. Because I keep my stuff really, really current. That's why I stay really, really invested in my relationship with my sponsor. Because left to my own devices, I'm not good, right? Like, I can't trust the stuff that happens in my head, and I need to share it with another human being. And that's what all that we stuff that we're talking about at the beginning, when y'all are yelling we in your super rambunctious, fantastic way, that's what they're talking about, right? It's like, I got to get with another human being, let them know exactly who I am so they can tell me the ways in which I'm falling short. And then I got to do that for somebody else, right? Like, I got to give this back. And that's a real important part of the equation. Service is, the book is like, if you read the big book, the answer to everything, the answer to your problem is service. Like about 8,000 times in that book, the answer to your problem is service. For those of you that have a faith in a higher power, you need the higher power to get there. But then your higher power's advice to you is, go be of service, dumbass. Right? That's it. That's like, you talk to your higher power, you talk to your sponsor, and then you go find another alcoholic to help. That's what this is about. And so service is super, super big. I have a home group. I have a service commitment in that home group. I have sponsees. I have started a couple of meetings. I started a Buddhist meditation recovery meeting, which has been tremendous, because it helps people who need something extra or something different, right? Because some of us are not going to be able to get past that stuff. Because the book is also kind of like, well, you can believe everything you want to. Believe anything you want to. But if you don't believe in God, you're fucked. Right? And it can be off-putting. I've learned to deal with it. I've learned to come to terms with it. It doesn't bother me, right? The things in the book that aren't my story don't bother me anymore. And they did at first. And I understand that some people are going to need that. So we have provided this other thing that people can do. And we get them on the road to meditation, which is also an important part of the equation. If you can sit down with yourself alone for 10 minutes a day, every day, you'll change the way you are. I guarantee it. It will fundamentally, radically alter the way that you live. And I bet less than two people go try that. Because it's not very much fun. It's boring. But it is tremendous. What was the other thing I was going to talk about? Service and meditation are really my huckleberries today. My life today is tremendous, right? Like, I'm getting married to this lady right here. And I've never done, as far as I know, I've never done anything to make her regret that. And that's a first. Like every relationship I've ever been in, after a while, I make you regret being there. You don't want to be hanging out with me. I learned the relationship between showing up to work and paying your rent. That's a tremendous experience. Yeah. You know, like Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever group you go, 12-step group you go into, gives you the opportunity to grow up in public, right? Like, you get to learn to do, like, I didn't know people ate three meals a day, right? When I got the first, like, I was feeling really kind of out of sorts and crazy, and my sponsor was like, when's the last time you ate? And I was like, yesterday. And he's like, you might want to think about having food. I thought that was some Leave It to Beaver shit, right? Turns out people actually eat regularly. Who knew? And really, I had to learn that. I didn't know how to balance a checkbook. I thought you put the card in the machine, and it gave you money, and that was magic. And you just got to keep the money. Turns out you have to put more back in. Or they get mad at you. And that was a really, really humbling thing to have to admit to another adult human. I don't know how to balance a checkbook. Can you show me how to do that? All of the things that I didn't know how to do as an adult human being that I should have learned along the way, I learned primarily from people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are willing to help you with anything, anything at all, so that you can become the kind of person who suits up and shows up, right? Which is what I am today. Weirdly, I'm a person who suits up and shows up. And that's fucking awesome, right? Let's see. I don't really have much more than that, except that I'll just say that I think it's super, super important that you do this thing, right? Like, the answer is the work on the wall. No matter what you believe. And I will say that what you believe is irrelevant, right? Like, we're all sitting here. All of us are, except for me, who is standing. We're all here in this room because we believed in something, right? And it's not all the same, right? Like, what that guy believes and what that lady believes and what my girlfriend believes, they're all different. Which tells me that it doesn't matter what you believe, but it matters that you believe, right? That you have something to fall back on and to deliver you through those times when the work seems impossible or life seems impossible or the shit in your head tells you it's impossible. You know, I have a lot of shit in my head. I suffer from a pretty good case of PTSD, and I have, like, stuff that goes off in my head in color and 3D all the time. And I've learned through doing this work, some really good therapy and meditation, that the stuff that happens in my head is irrelevant, right? It's also super suspect. Like, most of the stuff that happens between my ears is not shit I should trust, right? If it tells me to have a sandwich, I'll listen. But if it says, hey, you should skip work and go buy 1,000 collectibles, I'm going to go, I think I'm not going to listen to you today. And that's the part of my addiction that wants to do anything it can to push me back towards fulfilling that thing, right? Because it wants that to be the thing that fills that, what they call the hole inside of us, right? We've all felt that, I think, where you're out there and the world seems to not get you at all, and you feel empty and worthless, right? Like, I think I don't have to define it for you. I'm sure you felt it. And that's where it wants to push me back, because then the drugs and the alcohol can be in control again, right? And they get to have their way with me. And now I fill it up with something else, and that's the work. And I apply it to everything now. Like, it's a part of all, like, the drugs and the alcohol aren't even a part of the equation hardly anymore, right? Like, I don't run to my sponsor because I thought I was needed to have a drink today. That almost never happens. It happens from time to time. I run to him because I can't figure out how to have a discussion with my girlfriend about something, right? Turns out you just go talk to her. But I want to complicate it. I want to complicate everything. I want to make it harder. I want to make a story about it, right? Like, I have this, we all have what I call the story or the narrative. And we concoct this story about who we are, who everybody else is, and what it all means. And it's all bullshit, right? It doesn't mean anything. It's just some stuff you're telling yourself. And it's not usually respective of the facts of the situation. And deconstructing the narrative is super, super important. And you get that, I think, probably the first time is in 5, when you're telling another human being all of your stuff, right? And you have all these ideas about what it means and what your part is and who you were, and all this stuff was done to me. They hurt me. I hate them. Turns out none of it was personal, right? Like, even the really heinous shit, and a lot of heinous shit was done to me. That shit wasn't personal. I was just in the crosshairs for that person in that moment. And if it hadn't have been me, it had been somebody else. Just turns out it was my turn in the barrel that day. And so this story you're having in your head, and then you're telling it out loud to this other human being who is at alternate turns shaking their head or smiling, is generally the way it goes for me. Just going, God bless your little heart. You poor, pitiful thing. You find out your story's not true. Almost none of it is true. The basic fact somebody hurt me is true. Beyond that, all the other drama and shit I've added to it is just drama and shit I've added to it. And when your story stops being true, that means you get to have a new story, right? And you can have one based on the facts if you stick around and you do the work. And that's a tremendously amazing thing, right? Like, if I just do this, my story is going to be good. My story is going to be true, and my story is going to be real. Real is good, because I don't, all the other stuff I was doing before was about not being real. Being dishonest to the point of suicidal, so that I don't have to tell you anything about me or let you know who I really am, because really, frankly, honestly, you people all terrify me, right? People in the world terrify me. I'm afraid of them. I don't know why, but I am. And when I change the story, I don't walk around afraid all the time of everything and everyone. And that's an amazing burden to have lifted. So I had this story about who I was and what had happened to me, and it all got torn down. And then I rebuilt it with a story about service and ceasing fighting anyone and anything and pausing when agitated or doubtful. Those two things are probably my favorite things in the book. We cease fighting anyone and anything. And I felt like I had done that at one point, like in this go-round. I've ceased fighting anyone and anything. Look, I've got this shit. I'm good. And then the noise started happening in my head, and I wanted to argue with it. And I went, oh, maybe you haven't ceased fighting anyone and anything. And that was when I first realized that the noise in my head didn't have to matter at all. I didn't have to argue with it. It just had to be shit that happened. It's unpleasant. Unpleasant goes away. Everything's impermanent. It's not going to be here forever, even though it feels like it in the moment. And now I've lost my train of thought completely. Yeah, I'm gone now. I went away. Anyway, so I've rebuilt this life that was tattered and torn and deeply unpleasant for everyone around me into a thing that I can be reasonably proud of. I show up to work every day and I do the job I'm paid to do. And I come home every day to my girlfriend and the kids, and I don't go fuck other women anymore. You know, I never have to have a fight with my girlfriend's husband. That's an amazing thing. Also, sorry, I fucked your wife is not an amends. Yeah, just so we're clear about that. Yeah. And again, there's one of those living amends I get to make, because I owe a bunch of people some amends for that shit. And all I can really do is just not do it anymore. And nobody's punched me in the head in a really long time. That's pretty nice. I will just say this, that meetings are vital. Fellowship is vital. All these things are vital. But service is the number one thing. Service keeps you in 10, 11, and 12, right? And that's where you need to live once you get out of this place, right? As I need to be in 10, 11, and 12 all the time, every day. So I don't have to go back and make amends for some new shit, right? I don't want to do that. If I stay in 10, 11, and 12, I don't ever have to do that again, right? And I think I do that reasonably effectively. And it's all about a disciplined course of meditation. I say that I haven't sat all week. I sat today, didn't I? I'm lying to myself again. And then having those commitments, you know, to other people and to your home group, suit up and show up. And if you try any of this for any period of time, I guarantee it will alter the way that you live. And it's been tremendous for me. I didn't know that I wanted what I had, right? I always thought I wanted something else. I wanted this thing or this person or that person. And it turns out what I have is enough. And that was a thing I was completely unfamiliar with. Enough. You know, like, there needs to be more. Whatever it is, like when I'm active, do you have more dope? Because I need more dope. When I'm not doing that, I need more TV or more food or more of anything. If I'm doing the work, what I have right now today becomes enough, and I don't need for it to be anything else, right? And that's amazing to me that this can just be enough, right? That I can just show up, have this life, and be grateful for it. Because gratitude is also not a part of my natural equation. Right? Gratitude is something I had to learn how to have, and I learned how to have it by doing things to make me grateful, right? Like, gratitude is an action was one of the most important things anyone said to me early on. And so by showing up and working with other guys or showing up with my sponsor, or chairing that meeting at 10 o'clock that I just don't fucking want to go to, you know, I become grateful. And I don't know why, but I do. And so for me, it isn't about what I think, which isn't very important. Turns out my opinions are mostly irrelevant to everyone but me. And it isn't about what I believe, because we all believe different stuff, and here we are. It's about what I do. It's about what I do. And this time around, I changed the way I do everything, right? Everything. Because I thought I was doing it right before, and it led me right back out the door. And so I just am diligent about this. I'm diligent about my spiritual program, because while I am an atheist, I have had a deep and profound spiritual experience, which is, I think that's an important thing to mention. It's a profound spiritual experience, because it's not just sitting on a cushion when you're doing Buddhist meditation. There's a whole thing that goes along with it, which weirdly parallels the 12 steps. It's kind of frightening, right? Like, and if you ever want to know about that, I'm happy to tell you about it. But, and I also, the other thing is, I don't keep secrets anymore about anything, because that's not safe for me. I will secret myself right out the fucking door. And I don't tell my girlfriend everything. Like, she doesn't need to know my every little thought. But she knows who I am. She knows what I'm about. And she knows when I'm right and when I'm wrong, right? She can tell when I'm off, because I've been honest with her about who I am. And that, in turn, has led me to have the most amazing relationship of my life. And now I think I want to marry me too. I thank you all very much. I don't know if that helped, or I felt like I just rambled, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much.